Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. After much anticipation, this week the Trump administration is set to reveal the reciprocal tariffs on April 2nd. There is also important economic data set to be released, headlined by the March payrolls report coming out on Friday. Also, interesting political developments worth monitoring. So joining us here today in studio to discuss this all, glad to welcome back the Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office, Jason Dreho. Jason, thank you for dropping by here in studio and for spending some time with our listeners and clients here on this Monday morning.
Good morning, Dan. Good to be back after a week remote.
Definitely. So, Jason, as I alluded to, there is a lot on deck for this week, a lot top of mind for investors. Let's begin with the tariff announcement coming up on April 2nd, which did seem to rattle markets a bit this past Friday. What does CIO expect to hear from the White House this week?
Well, it's continuing to rattle markets this morning as futures are kind of opening down. Look, there's a lot of conjecture at this point in time in terms of what they will announce. There's a decent chance the administration themselves may not have finalized exact set of numbers on the approach they want to go based on at least reporting over the weekend. And I'd also want to flag a report that a team in CIO, our risk team, published overnight. Basically, literally, it's a preview for what to expect with these reciprocal tariffs on April 2nd. So I'll cite some of that because I think it's kind of the best way to kind of think about where we are right now. So I guess the first question is what to expect in terms of actual tariffs. These reciprocal tariffs are likely to target a range of countries. The administration has said, they'll emphasize the 80%, well, the bulk of the trade deficit comes with a handful of countries, 15% of countries, and they'll be the kind of main, let's call it, recipients of these reciprocal tariffs. But the focus is also likely to be on Europe and Asia ex-China, given that there's already been significant tariffs announced on China and also tariffs on Canada, Mexico, certainly auto tariffs from last week. And also maybe some product-oriented specific tariffs, whether it's pharmaceuticals, semis, lumber, copper, similar to what was announced last week with autos and various kind of auto parts. So, pretty broad scope of what it could be. Exactly how it's sliced and diced, that remains to be determined. The question is just how much, will the tariffs actually go up? So as a practical matter, instead of thinking about it could be a 10% tariff here and a 15% tariff there, ultimately, what does it matter in terms of for the economic implications are what is the effective tariff rate on all the imports coming into the U.S.? And by that, I mean, if you take the tariff rates across different goods, you weight how much those goods come into the U.S., like what percentage of imports are those different goods. You weight and you multiply that by then the different tariff rates applied to those goods or countries, then you can say, well, effectively, the tariff rate on all imports into the U.S. is X percent. Well, if we came into this year, we've already seen the effective tariff rates on imports increase from 2.5% to 9% based on the increase for China, for Canada, Mexico, for auto parts. We would expect that reciprocal tariffs will push out another 4 percentage points higher. So now you're looking at roughly in the mid-teens rate for effective tariffs. To go much higher, you risk kind of getting out of a sweet spot for tariffs. By that, I mean if the administration wants to raise revenue of a certain amount, not have a recession, but also influence where companies and businesses invest, if you go too high, you risk that you may actually not generate incremental revenue because you slow down the economy, you tip into recession, so you lose more on the other side. So to go too far, too aggressive, it has too much downside risk. So that's why we think it's somewhat measured, all things considered. Then the key question, and some of the bigger questions, is how long does this last? Because we could get, sort of a maximalist approach on Wednesday, meaning high, absolute numbers announced with delays in terms of when stuff actually goes into effect, whether it's, say, March 1st, June 1st, would provide time for negotiations, potential off-ramps. I guess what we can say with maybe some confidence is that this is likely to be sort of peak uncertainty. So we'll at least know what the administration is going to do. They kind of lay their cards on the table. And then things could certainly change before implementation. There could be negotiation. But it's likely to be kind of the peak level and things kind of go lower. Because there are numerous potential sort of off-ramps available to kind of bring down tariffs through negotiations, particularly, with Canada and Mexico with the free trade deal.
So very fluid at the moment, Jason. You suggested a few moments ago that the White House still may be in the process of figuring out what the announcement this week week will exactly consist of. It's interesting, I did notice in your most recent blog, titled From Uncertainty to Risk, you said that political considerations could factor into tariff decisions. So what exactly do you mean by that, Jason?
So I think this matters not so much what's announced on Wednesday at the absolute level, but how long they stay in place and what sort of happens with negotiations. Look, you know, tariffs will have, at least in the near term, a negative economic consequences. We're already kind of seeing that. We're seeing it in financial markets. You know, it'll be directionally inflationary. It could impact growth negatively, you know, and it could start to show up relatively quickly based on past episodes of where tariffs were implemented. You know, we already see, you know, sentiment for the consumers, for businesses, you know, dropping quite a bit. Could this start to manifest in sort of unhappiness with and approval ratings for President Trump, but also Republicans in general? So it's interesting to this week, it's getting less attention. But for example, tomorrow in Florida, on April 1st, there are two special elections to fill seats left that were vacated in a post-election. There are Republican seats, you know, fairly safe Republican seats, but one of them, I think, where Trump had won by 30%. The candidate is viewed as perhaps not the strongest candidate, and some of the polling suggests it's almost within the margin of error. Like, you know, they won't lose it, but you can be uncomfortably close.
Close, yeah.
We saw last week, you know, in a state Senate election in Pennsylvania, you know, a Republican seat the Democrat won, surprisingly. President Trump asked his nominee, Elise Stefanik, who was for UN ambassador, to basically step down, like to stay in Congress. Certainly Republicans have a small margin to pass legislation, but they can have her stay in Congress to pass legislation and then go to the UN job. So the fact that they actually kept it, you know, signals some concern that perhaps in a special election they would lose that seat as well. So the, you know, this week will provide a bit of a quick early gauge in terms of public approval of, you know, Trump, and particularly I think the economic policies. But as we go further, as the tariffs are implemented, is there economic consequences, again, you might see approval ratings decline. Then it's a question like, well, does the administration, if that happens, you know, stay committed to it? Does it give them sort of justification? Well, we did this and now we'll back off on some tariffs. We'll be more willing to do deals. This is a conjecture, but I think that's something that has to kind of factor in, given, you know, what we might learn this week in terms of the public, you know, support or disapproval, as it were, of some of the economic policies thus far.
There's a lot there factoring into these decisions, it sounds like, Jason. If we put tariffs on hold for a moment, I do want to turn to the economy. Concerns do persist about a slowdown and rising risk of a recession. What does the latest data say about the health of the U.S. economy?
Well, if you look at sentiment data, you'd really be worried about the strength of the economy, because it's both consumer sentiment, business sentiment are rolling over, you know, relatively, you know, sharply. Now, in context, they're not at the lows they were, you know, a couple of years ago, but definitely not moving in the direction where you expect, you know, things to be getting better. So the sentiment is getting worse, but the actual activity data, like the hard data, hasn't really shown much weakness, you know, just yet. Some softening, but not, you know, kind of comparable to what we're seeing with the sentiment data. The latest data that we got for consumer spending on last Friday for February, the personal consumption expenditure data, it was below expectations. The January number was also kind of, you know, revised lower, feeding into these concerns about, you know, consumer spending. Now, a couple caveats to that data. This is coming after a very strong fourth quarter where annualized real spending was over 4%. We're also seeing some seasonal quirks at the start of the year, whether it's inflation or spending data. We saw the same pattern last year, where spending in the fourth quarter of 2023 was very strong, growing almost at 5%. And then you actually saw a negative growth in January and February, not quite as negative as this year, but also negative. Mm-hmm. Same story this year, or this past, you know, 5 months or 6 months, very strong fourth quarter consumption, weakness in Q1, Q2. So there could be some seasonal adjustments that are also kind of, you know, overstating the weakness we're seeing in consumer spending, just, you know, keeping that in mind. The flip side is if you look at the income piece of the data, it was better than expected. So incomes are still kind of rising, you know, steadily. You know, again, maybe some moderation on a year-over-year basis, but still, you know, relatively strong. We also saw an uptick in the savings rate. In February, it's up to 4.6%. For context, in the fourth quarter, average 3.7%. So if we look at the savings data, the spending patterns, where the income is, what it suggests is that consumers are being cautious, you know, because of this high uncertainty on policy, on the economy, not necessarily because they can't afford it. If income growth is coming in, that people are just willing to sort of dial back a little bit. The other thing that's kind of critical to the economy is the state of the labor market. You know, it has certainly been cooling over the past, well, frankly, couple of years, but there are a few signs of imminent cracking. The initial jobless claims that come out every Thursday morning, they're hovering around 225,000. Mm-hmm. That's actually lower than the level it was for much of the second half of last year. So not a signs of real uptick. The kind of announced job cuts, you know, there's been a bit of a surge there in the Challenger job cut announcements. But it seems to be skewed by the government cuts. Like that's definitely, you know, jumped quite a bit. If you look at other sectors, it's not, in some cases, nothing out of the ordinary. Some of those cuts aren't in the U.S. They could be abroad overall. So again, you know, a little bit of inflation, but not yes, a really bad, you know, results. The key will be is does job growth continue to be strong? Because layoffs are low. That's why what we get on Friday for the March payrolls report is going to be critical. The consensus forecast is around 140,000, down from about 150 in February. Given there's a pretty good kind of relationship between where are jobless claims going into it, where are, where are the prior months. All that would suggest, again, a number that like the mid 150,000 range is kind of reasonable. If that number comes in, it shows, look, you know, the economy is generating, you know, jobs, layoffs are low. If the labor market is solid, that supports ultimately consumer spending. Consumer spending supports the economy, it supports the job market. It's kind of a bit of a virtuous cycle. If we get cracks on either side, certainly that you know, kind of creates, you know, downside risk. But as long as they hold up, I think the risk of a significant slowdown in the economy is, you know, is somewhat limited overall.
So in terms of what this means for the market outlook and positioning, I know last week, Jason, the chief investment office did update the house view. So a good timing that you're joining us here this morning. What are some notable changes and key messages in focus within the latest house view?
Well, the overall message, I'd say, is still kind of largely the same. Like we've been saying for a while, and we'll continue to expect that the markets are going to be volatile in the near term as investors, you know, navigate all this U.S. policy and economic uncertainty. And just, you know, of course, this week we have these two major kind of risk events with the tariffs and also jobs data. So getting through that at a minimum reduces some uncertainty. At least, you know, tariffs might be high, but we know what they are, and you can start to kind of calibrate and adapt, you know, accordingly. But ultimately, we kind of expect that the news flow, you know, from here will become more positive towards the second half of the year. On the economic fundamentals, you know, what I just covered in terms of the consumer, the labor market, show that ultimately the economy is relatively resilient. As that happens, then the downside tail risks start to get, you know, truncated. Mm-hmm. So the markets, you know, if they're already pricing in a decent amount of slowdown, that, you know, allows them to move higher. But then also, you know, policy, whether it is Trump 2.0 policies or monetary policy, should also to inflect to be more supportive for financial markets, possibly before the end of the second quarter. Now, you can, simple terms, you know, there's an insane, like, you know, don't fight the Fed. Mm-hmm. If they're hiking, that's not great. If they're cutting, that's a tailwind. Now, same thing from a, you know, Trump policy perspective. Mm-hmm. If the policies such as tariffs or cutting government spending are viewed as negatives near term for growth, it's hard to be overly, you know, constructive in the very near term. On the other hand, if they pivot to more growth enhancing or growth friendly policies, which I think they will want to do at some point, and perhaps soon, that again, there'll be a tailwind for the markets. So you could say, when will the Trump and Fed puts be exercised? Mm-hmm. And maybe more simply, when will you see kind of policy pivot in a more friendly way? On the Fed, we still expect the Fed to cut twice this year, starting in June. This is very data dependent. It's very policy dependent. There is some concern by investors that the Fed could perhaps be behind the curve. Like they're going to be reactive to what tariff policy is, see how this impacts the economy, because they know tariffs will be inflationary. But if there's any signs of weakness in the labor market, you know, we already saw last September, the Fed was willing to be aggressive with a 50 basis point cut, right, on the sign of some labor market last summer. So I think the Fed could, you know, could move and probably would move fairly quickly if they see the labor market, you know, weakening. And on that front, I think you get the administration then again would probably try to pivot more towards some growth friendly policies, perhaps, you know, dial down the what's happening on the trade front. If you get those inflections just in the direction of policy, that alone, you know, would be favorable for the markets. You know, when that's going to happen, it's hard to predict, but, you know, it's somewhat contingent on the economic data, but a good chance it happens. Certainly, you know, I think by the summer, maybe as soon as the end of the second quarter. When that happens, that is ultimately, I think, favorable for financial markets, you know, overall, for equities overall. And as uncertainty, policy uncertainty is at a peak right now, it does not stay at this levels persistently. At some point, you kind of get clarity of what the policy is. As that declines, volatility tends to decline, and that's generally kind of is supportive for risk assets overall. Which is why when we, you know, have some of the key messages in focus, you know, one of them is, you know, take advantage of U.S. volatility. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean, you know, if you get pullbacks, you know, phase into the markets, kind of buy these dips, because ultimately we do think you know, after this kind of volatility plays out, that the fundamental story for U.S. stocks, for the tech stocks that have been hit quite hard, the fundamentals for AI are still very much kind of in place. So use these market swings not as a kind of sell the rally, but more as a kind of, you know, buy the dip in terms of add exposure. Kind of related to that, a lot of interest certainly in international markets that have outperformed the U.S. Mm-hmm. But we think a lot of that sort of good news, whether it is on, you know, policy pivots, you know, fiscal policy in Germany, potential ceasefire in Ukraine, the China kind of internet development news on AI related stories, a lot of it's already kind of priced in, versus the U.S. there's a fair amount of pessimism. Mm-hmm. So typically when that happens, that's actually, you get some reversals in that. So we'd be cautious on, or be selective on Europe. We look at Europe as kind of six different ways. Especially that are ways that are not going to be tariff sensitive, because it's unlikely that, we don't think that European equities are really fully pricing in the consequences of higher tariffs on Europe. Thinking about other parts of the asset classes, you're navigating political risks, and we've seen gold be a very good hedge, and we think it will continue to be a good diversifier and hedge in this uncertain political environment. And then on fixed income, kind of seek durable income. Given there's kind of these growth concerns out there, credit spreads still remain relatively tight. If there's downside risk, there's a significant, you know, reason for spreads to widen. So stay up in quality overall, you know, higher quality fixed income, whether it's treasuries, higher quality investment grade corporate bonds, agency MBS, things that, again, would be a little more immune to some of the economic weakness. And if we're right about sort of things will get a little bit better as the year goes on, interest rates, you know, have to, you know, given where the tenure is, could easily kind of move, you know, higher. So not so suggesting taking a lot of interest rate risk at this time, sticking more at the intermediate part of the curve, like the 5 to 7 year point, given that if rates back up, then of course you're more exposed from that perspective.
Well, Jason, thank you for keeping our listeners, our clients current on CIO's thinking when it comes to the market outlook, positioning recommendations. As we spoke about, it will be a very busy few days ahead. So it will give us, of course, a lot to talk about during our next conversation next Monday. Though, thank you, Jason, for previewing what will be a very busy week for the markets, and look forward to picking back up with our conversation next week.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
Likewise, Jason. Thank you. Again, today we have been speaking with Jason Draho, the head of asset allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Again, I do want to highlight Jason's blog, which we have been making reference to during our conversation today. Title is From Uncertainty to Risk. This, along with the latest UBS House View Investment Strategy Guide, the House View Monthly Update, can now be located up on UBS.com/CIO. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit UBS.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit UBS.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.